Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Showgram Extravaganza. Mike Siano, along with Corey Stach Schwartz. And the Duke is in the house, Jim Duquette.
It was the Duke.
Short 2 weeks ago, we were together.
That's right. And for those of you who don't know or don't remember, Jim Duquette, former Major League General Manager, current host on MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM, Monday through Friday, 10 to 1.
You got it.
Woohoo!
Got it. You're on it.
And of course, MLB.com analyst and friend of the 411. Great friend of the 411. Dutch uncle, if you will.
I don't know what that
means. Do a little housekeeping.
I like
Fantasy411.mlblogs.com. On the Twitter machine, what are you, at Jim R. Duquette?
Jim underscore Duquette.
At Schwartzstops, at Zach MLB, at Fred Zinke MLB.
Fred, if you're listening, let's make this deal, okay? Fred Zinke and I have been talking trade and tout wars for like a week, and we're this close, like thumb and forefinger, on like four different things, and I just can't tip him yet. But I'm working on it. Every time AJ Ramos gets a save, we get closer and closer to making a deal.
Of course, the general account at Fantasy411. Don't forget two star pitchers on the blog on Friday. Don't forget Fred Zinke writing his face off for you on MLB.com. So make sure you go to the Fantasy landing page to find all of Fred's works and the great job of Zach Finkelstein and Zach Steinman. Okay. That's enough with the housekeeping.
I like the housekeeping.
Let's work our way backwards, shall we? Meaning most, let's go reverse chron, as they say.
Okay.
Real quick, we wanted to, and you mentioned in your email, yes, we'll talk about this, but briefly, he mentioned. Corey Kluber, out of his mind yesterday, like one of the highest game scorer in an eight-inning game ever, something like that.
It's like literally, by game score, a top 10 pitching performance.
Right.
In a nine-inning game.
He was pretty good. No walks, one hit, 18 strikeouts.
Yeah, and, you know, we got a lot of questions. I saw a lot of questions on Twitter, not just to us, but other fantasy, you know, writer, reporter, analyst types. Is it time to get worried about Kluber? And I'm looking at him like, stuff is there, strikeout to walk rate is there, everything's there. Nope, keep running him out there.
Yep.
And then I'm out on Twitter while we're waiting to start, and I see somebody tweet out, I can't believe I benched Kluber. And I'm like, I can't believe you benched Kluber either. Why did you do that?
Well, I mean, you know, we talk so much about matchups, Duke, and you were saying how that's how you've risen in the standings in your league, playing the matchups. You know, with the struggles he had and the Cardinals, you know, Carpenter was back. He was over his extreme fatigue.
Yeah.
You know, I could see people getting cold feet. I mean, I don't recommend it because it's only May, whatever. Any damage done, you could always dig yourself out of, unlike in like maybe September. A little surprising that people would bench him, but it's not like the matchup was a piece of cake either.
No, I know. That's what made it even more impressive, and that's why, you know, you could see some of these starts leading up to it. You couldn't have predicted that with the Cardinals, but you know, you look at guys like that, as long as the stuff is there, as you're talking about, he's throwing strikes, you know, the hard hit ball, some of the hard hit ball data that's out there now, I've been looking at some of that stuff. It's really good stuff, and I think it's helpful in trying to figure out if there's a loss in their stuff or drop in velocity, or if they're just kind of going through a rough stretch like they always do. And, you know, I think that's the one thing with Kluber is it's been pretty impressive versus a guy like Strasburg, who we were talking about before. That's another kind of interesting contrast.
But to your point, Mike, it's almost like, who's your first-round hitter? You know, Joey Bautista, let's say. No matter how badly he's struggling, he's your first-round hitter. Once you bench him...
McCutcheon in April.
Right.
And now McCutcheon in May is a great example.
You just have to play them. Corey Kluber was drafted along with the aces.
Mm-hmm.
You put him out there for 32 or 33 or 34 starts, and then you hope the numbers are there at the end. But to bench that guy 6 weeks into the season, especially when the indicators suggested happier days were ahead, crazy times.
Yeah.
Now, the other guy, let's get into him.
Strasburg. Yes.
I'm stealing your host hat.
Yes, I see
I
what
put
you
it on.
Well, I'm fine with it. I'm just going to kick back and do
what
nothing.
What do you see with Strasburg, Jim?
Strasburg is an interesting one because, you know, what bothers me a little bit is what he's saying. He goes, well, I'm not sure what's going on. I'm you know, and when you hear a player talk about that publicly, that he's lost, that is concerning. His pitching coach thinks it's mechanical. There's an adjustment there. You know, I think there's a couple things that I look at. You know, I saw his game the other night. I've watched a lot of his games. The fastball velocity is there. It looks like he's flying off towards the towards the first base side a lot, which I think happens. You see his arm slide. You see the ball kind of flatten up in the zone. You see him not using his changeup as much. He's not. Yeah, he's using more four seam than two seam. Like all these things, a lot of balls up in the zone, not getting a lot of swings and misses. To me, that's a mechanical or alignment issue than it is injury issue, like some people are suggesting. And I just think that he's too good, and I think he'll figure it out once they kind of work on that mechanical spot. That's my thought.
And it's interesting, being a data guy, you know, looking at the numbers, it's a very much a mixed bag. As Jim said, you know, more fastballs, fewer changeups, but not a huge, you know, not like a drastic change, a couple of percentage points in either direction. But the velocity is there. The movement is there. Horizontal and vertical movement is there. Strand rate is very low. Batting average on balls in play is very high. So you say, all right, this guy's been pitching in some bad luck. But by the same token, the home run to fly ball rate has been pretty low. It's not like he's given up home runs left and right. So he's been getting some good luck there. The thing that was interesting to me was looking at his release point. It's really changed a lot since the beginning of last season. The horizontal release point, which is, you know, where he positions on the rubber, shifted drastically around June last year. But he had a pretty good year last year. So you're like, all right, that shouldn't have been the problem. But what was interesting, the vertical release point has been dropping and dropping and dropping throughout last year and even more so this year. And you wonder, maybe, you know, he's still got the arm strength and all that to get the same velocity and movement, but because he's throwing from a different arm slot, maybe he's not able to command the pitches as well as he would like. And that's why you're seeing the strikeouts down a little, the walks up a little. The stuff is still there, but he's not able to command the stuff as well. And like Jim said, it stinks to me of more of a mechanical problem plus some of that bad luck on balls in play rather than a guy hiding an injury, unless the shoulder's dropping because of an injury. Right.
So let's assume it's not. It's so what it sounds like is a tremendous buy low opportunity.
I think so, for sure.
Maybe an all-time great buy low opportunity. Because much like Kluber, I mean, you know, not that Strasburg is going to fix it tomorrow and then go strike out 20 guys, but he can go on runs. That's how you win your league.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, we've talked about this a million times, not going to belabor it. I'm not the type to deal for a starting pitcher usually, right. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to, I'm going to go for a distressed asset that's a high caliber, high upside play. And if I can get a discount, that's where I'd be a lot more interested. But to pay full value for a number three starter, like, why would you do that?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Some other topics. Bullpen follies.
Where's the music? They're supposed
to. Did you get the Calypso music?
Calliope music, not steel drums.
There's a big one, and you mentioned it with your Fred Zinke trade stuff. AJ Ramos, who is perceived has taken over for Steve Cishek, who who I thought was somebody cut him in a league I was in. I was like, I'll pick him up. I got nothing to lose. I didn't start him. It just took up a roster spot. But what do we say?
You can't. We
have two sayings to come out.
We have a lot of sayings, but this one is the road to fifth place is littered with closers of the future. Now, picking up Cishek makes a lot of sense.
It was a couple weeks ago.
You know, Cishek, for his part, you know, again, the stuff has been there. The velocity's down a little bit, but he's got Zippo command of his stuff right now, and they had to get him out of there. One meltdown is enough. Back-to-back meltdowns, you can't let that happen.
And to your point about Strasburg, Cishek's like, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
He came out and said that too. He's like, I don't know what's going on.
And those little three-quarter guys, right. they have a tendency sometimes to lose that slot, lose the arm slot, or something in that front side of their delivery flies open and you see the arm, you know, there's such a fine line between them being good or bad that he's going to figure it out. I believe it. I think it was a good pickup from your standpoint, because I think eventually he's going to go back into that role.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, but, you know, he said himself, you know, you said he's not sure what's going on. But he said at one point over the winter that sometimes he gets a little too slider happy. And as you said, Jim, if that arm slot drops, then the sliders start to frisbee up there, you know, and become a lot more hittable. They don't have the same catcher as they did last year. You know, Salta Lamacchia is gone. JT Realmuto is in now, and I'm not blaming him. But maybe they're getting a little too slider happy, and they need to go back to mixing his pitches a little bit more, plus the arm slot. But I will say this. There's a lot of... You know, it seems to be a little bit of an uncertain thing right now whether or not it's going to be a committee, or are they going to sign Rafael Soriano or trade for Papelbon. One thing I've said a million times, so make it a million and one. Two things need to happen for a closer shift to change. One guy's got to give it up, and some guy's got to take it away. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, Ramos is not giving up that job.
Really?
Ramos was the best reliever in that bullpen on day one, and he's going to finish the season as their closer, and I'll tell you why. If you look at the trend coming into this season, he was getting better and better and better. He's not a, you know, Craig Kimbrell, Aroldis Chapman, blow you away with 100 type of closer, but he throws 92, and he has four pitches. And not only that, he has four plus pitches. His changeup is a dominator, and he's got a slider and a curve too. So he's basically got a full-on starter repertoire as a closer. To me, I don't have any question he's going to finish the season as their closer. And I think every time they give him the ball, he's going to nail it down more and more and more. I think as far as being a closer is concerned Cishek is over.
Okay. I mean, and you were right about Soria. I mean, you said very similar things about Soria. Now, this was before Nathan was done.
Before the injury, right?
But Soria did go out in that window before Nathan was officially done and dominated.
Right.
And continues to.
The big concern about Ramos, you know, number one is his command. He walked 43 guys each of the last two years.
Right.
But so far this year, 6 walks in 18 innings. If that's a trend and not a blip, that's sort of the last concern about him. And then look at those other guys, you know. Dunn is a good lefty setup guy, but I think they like him as a setup guy because he's their top lefty.
Right.
Morris and Hughes, these are not people, or not Hughes, Morris and the other righty they have, these are not guys who are going to take the job away from Ramos. Right. They're not better pitchers, and they're not pitching better right now.
Right.
So they may get some help, but I think Ramos is going to run away with the job.
That's the only debate I have. I think it's either Cishek or Ramos. I don't think those other guys are going to factor. Unless they go to Soriano. And even Soriano, when we saw him last year, his second half, you know, now he'd be a motivated Soriano, so it kind of changes things. But the last 2 months weren't very good. But, you know, Ramos, that's the one thing, my one concern with him is the command. I've said that before. You have a closer, and you walk a couple guys, that drive the manager nuts. You know, and if Cishek figures it out, hits a known quantity, saw what he did last year, he's going to want to give him that role back at some point over a guy that he doesn't have much of a track.
But, again, let's say, you know, just purely hypothetical. Let's say Ramos cashes in 6 straight save opportunities.
Yeah, it would be hard to take
And
out,
right. Cishek starts to get it together. Then you've got the best of both worlds, right?
Sure.
We've got guys in roles where they're both succeeding. There's no reason to make a change at that point. You don't take a guy out of the closer role when he's getting it done.
No. Yeah, I mean, yes, you're right, and that makes total sense on paper, but you wonder sometimes with managers in the Scarlet Sea, and, you know, clubhouse management, right? You're managing a clubhouse at the same time. Is it really fair to whichever guy? I mean, you can make an argument if it's not, it wouldn't be fair to either guy to have them flip.
Right.
But, you know, he may lean towards, I'm just saying, it's a soft factor, and
No question.
Speculation, but it happened.
No question at all, and I totally agree with you. But remember, you know, Cishek melted down hard.
Yeah, that was.
It's going to be a while before he gets the opportunity again. He could run off 3 or 4 straight good outings before they even consider him.
Sure.
And then meanwhile, Ramos can run away with it. You know, Ramos was an excellent reliever last year too, and the year before that was pretty good. So, I agree with you that Cishek is a known commodity as the closer, but they know what they have in Ramos, and he's growing into what he can be now.
You look at Kluber. I mean, this is not really bullpen related, but we'll get back to Kenley Jansen McGee in a second. But going back to the Strasburg, Kluber, whoever else we were mentioning, you know, whether it's mechanics or whatever.
Yeah.
As you talk about it and I'm listening, I start thinking about the Red Sox and why they made, which is a fairly odd move, right? Firing your pitching coach in April or whatever, or early May. Now, granted, none of those guys were pitching well, but I wonder if, you know, you think about the value of the pitching coach, because if it is mechanical and the Nationals pitching coach figures it out, well, now Steven Strasburg's season is saved, you know.
Right.
And if Kluber was dealing with something similar, too, or whoever else you were mentioning before. So it's interesting to think about it from that, because, you know, sometimes you wonder what's the real value of these guys sometimes.
I think hitting and pitching coaches can have a lot to do if it's a mechanical problem.
Right.
If it's a mental problem, the guy's got to work that on his own. You know, the guys, you're a professional. You got to, hey, I got to get guys out. And maybe that's why they put them in low leverage situations. So, you know, the safety net is there behind them. If I put a couple of guys on, they're going to bail me out of here. You know, I'm a big believer that a good reliever can be the closer, you know, but I'm not a believer that there isn't something different about the ninth inning.
Right.
Anybody who says that, I'm a sabermetric guy, I'm a stat head, but telling me that it's not different being out there ninth inning with everybody watching you and no safety net and the other team doing everything they can to scrape out that one run, you can't tell me that's not different. You can't tell me that.
I agree.
No, it definitely is. But I wanted to get back to Mike's point about the pitching coach. You know, the interesting thing with Carl Willis, Juan Nieves was a really nice guy, but he wasn't real tough. You know, you had to have tough love sometimes with these major league pitchers. And Buchholz is the one guy that needed it that wasn't getting it. And I think, you know, John Farrell has already started that in motion, but I think that's the one guy that I look at. You know, within Buchholz, sometimes you can pick up. I picked up Buchholz, you know, that somebody had cut him. I picked him up, and I've just stored him on my bench because there's more in there than what we've seen. The stuff is there, and if they finally get to him and say, listen, you know, those are crappy pitches, and you got to get your head out of your rear end. You know, that kind of tough love that he needs. I think he has a chance to go on a run. Now, not the run maybe 2 years ago that we saw, but I do think that he's better. So that's where the other aspect of the pitching coach is, and I think you're going to see some of those Red Sox pitchers get better.
We spoke about C-Shack and opportunity and how to ease him back in, if he could even take this job back from Ramos. That is what is being, it will be done with Mattingly and Kenley Jansen. He's going to put him in some soft, easy situations, but he came out and said, make no mistake, this guy is the closer, but I just don't want to throw him into the fire his first start back.
Yeah. They said, appearance back. One or two low leverage situations. Sure. So
have him start the game.
Right. He pitched.
Have him start for Kershaw.
Wow. Well, look, that's what they did with him in the minors. Right? Yeah. He started.
Right. Yeah.
He was a starter. Yeah. But I think what will happen is, he pitched his last rehab outing last night, Wednesday night. He's due to come off the DL on Saturday, which suggests to me that with 2 days intervening, but, Thursday and Friday off, and wanting to get some of those low leverage situations out of the way, I'd be willing to bet he pitches on Saturday.
Right.
Almost no matter what. I mean, unless it's a 1-0 game in the ninth inning.
Right.
But if it's 5-0 or one way or the other, he's pitching.
Yep.
They get that out of the way. They get him back in that closer role. Because their bullpen's been okay, but they've had Hatcher meltdown a couple of times. Right. Garcia had a rough meltdown one night last week. So he's their closer.
Of course. Strength in numbers. And I don't expect, his value, the only thing that hurt, the only thing that happened to his value was just knocked him out of the top four, right?
Right.
Because
right.
we knew he wasn't right. going to pitch until middle of May.
But starting Monday, in my mind, he's a top five closer.
Exactly. Right. Well, that's why he got just knocked out of the top four. He became a number five when he maybe was top.
But that's my point. Knocking him out of that top four was a volume thing.
Right.
That's done.
Yes.
So if you were going to do a redraft league starting this upcoming Monday, I think he'd be your number four, number five closer off the board. Because you're just assuming it wasn't an arm problem. You're just assuming the performance will be there.
Right. And then
I'm going to let you talk more.
Jake?
No, I agree. I talked to Farhan Zaidi, the GM of the Dodgers, and he was saying the same thing. The impression was, it might only be one low leverage outing, and then they're going to. I mean, it won't be a tight game, won't be a tie game, but if it's a 2 or 3 run lead in the seventh, we may bring him in and start there and see what happens. But I didn't get any sense that it was going to be any longer than maybe two, and it probably would be one.
Yeah.
If Jake McGee comes back, it would be it'll be refreshing to see a Rays pitcher able to come back from an injury because, I mean, their luck in the rotation has been absolutely ridiculous this year in a bad way. But when McGee comes back, Boxberger is doing pretty good.
10 saves,
yeah. He's outstanding. Well, I love Boxberger. When Joe would bring him into the bases loaded, no out situation, he'd get out of it by striking out three guys last year. That opened my eyes to what he's all about. But I think Kevin, I've talked to Kevin Cash. He comes on my show once a week, and I asked him about this scenario.
Is this a show called Cash Money?
I like that. It's not beer money. but he said, he's not going to go with that conventional. It doesn't sound like he's going to go with that one conventional closer. He's going to go with whoever, hot hand matchups. And so it will make sense to keep Boxberger. Mm-hmm. And, if you have McGee. Yeah. And that gets a little trickier for me when you're, in fantasy, who's going to be that guy. But, certainly he's going to get closing opportunities. It's just not, they're not going to just shove him into that role and say, heck with you, Boxberger. Thanks for, the job that you did. Now you're going to be the eighth inning guy.
Yeah, so not closer by committee, platoon closer.
Yeah,
platoon.
I think that's a good way of looking at it. It's almost like, Kenley Jansen's going to be the closer, A, because he was injured and no one has has really stood out in his absence.
Or has his kind of stuff anyway, right?
Right, but no one sees the job, right? And then on the other hand, you've got the Marlins thing where Cishek lost it because of a performance issue, which is a lot worse than the injury in some respects, and Ramos, I think, will be able to perform and keep the job. The difference with this situation is that he was injured, but a guy has performed in his absence. And as Jim said, it's almost like it strikes me a lot more like the Miller and Betances situation. Everybody assumed Betances would be the closer, but Girardi never committed either way. He said, I'm going to go with the guy who can get the outs. And then Miller kind of seized the job. Boxberger has kind of seized the job. So you'd say, McGee lost the job because of an injury. But Boxberger is a closer quality pitcher and getting it done too. So that to me is where you're going to see a little bit more of a job share role. I'm a big believer that closer committees don't stick.
Right.
Somebody stands out and takes the job eventually, which is why I'm enthused about Ramos. I could see McGee getting saves, but it wouldn't shock me the way Boxberger has pitched so far if he remains the lead guy.
And even though Andrew Miller is the closer in New York, Girardi doesn't pitch them 3 days in a row. So if Betances pitches on Friday and Miller doesn't, and then Miller pitches Saturday, Sunday, you know, Betances is your lock, stone cold lock closer right. on Monday. You know what right. I mean? Like, sure. I might have messed up a little bit. So he's right. going to get, you're going to get those saves. I mean, I think the same thing could happen with yeah. McGee or Boxberger, yeah, where right. you have that, you know, Cash sets it up maybe very mm-hmm. similar to what Girardi's done.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is, again, you don't see a lot of lefty closers in baseball, not because they're not capable of doing the job, but just because there are fewer really good lefty relievers. Right. And I think most managers prefer to use them tactically rather than locking them into the ninth inning. Yeah. You know, it's easier to find right-handers who throw hard and can strike people out than lefties.
Right. I mean, if you're going to be a lefty closer, you better be good like Andrew Miller.
Yeah, and look at how even yeah. how yeah, Miller got used in the postseason last year. He wasn't just right. a ninth inning guy. It was right. what's the highest leverage situation? Yeah. And then he'd come in, he'd snuff the lefties, and then he'd get another few righties while he was at it because right, he couldn't get right, anybody right. out.
Yeah. And know? Then, well, here comes the other lefty to close it out in Britain.
Right, yeah. right. So, yeah. you know, that's a pretty high-value weapon, which is where I could see McGee being used a little Absolutely. Bit more tactically, even, you know, even if that means less saves.
All right, let's get to a little bit of offense, and then we'll do some lightning round on the tweets. And that concludes Closer Follies.
Okay. Oh, wait, I got to come up with a sound for Calypso music.
Boom, 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 boom.
Closer come and we want go home.
That was more jazz. all right, so we touched about him. We don't have to do too much on it. But, you know, you look at McCutcheon's April, and now you look at his May, and he said himself, right. take it easy, dude. Okay. Don't be falling on
the trash in the place.
Didn't break it
falling
yet.
Out of your chair over this McCutcheon segment. He said himself, he goes, I told you it wasn't the knee. I was just having problems with my mechanics, whatever, you know, so back to mechanics again. And now he's saying, see, told you so. So it took him a month, well, which is a little weird,
you know,
but he's red hot.
Here's the thing with you know, you never know those with the injuries because a lot of teams are, you know, and including Pittsburgh, they kind of withhold that information. Sure. You know, Washington's really coy about that information. But when Clint Hurdle said, he's one of the best hitting coaches I've ever been around. And so when he says, I see an alignment, well, it wasn't an alignment issue, his lower half and his upper half are not in sync. They have to get in sync, and, you know, they basically could see it, and he's working through it. I had a lot of faith and confidence that he was going to figure it out sooner rather than later, that it wasn't the knee, you know, because mm-hmm. it wasn't if he was going to figure it out. It was only if that knee was preventing him from right. sure. swinging the bat the way we know he can. You know, yeah. so once he's shown it, obviously, you know, now he's on track. He's not going to look back and look out.
You know, I mean, clearly he's been insistent the knee wasn't a problem, but the fact that he, you know, even when he was getting on, I think, you know, zero or only one stolen base attempts in April, to me that was an almost bigger tell that maybe he was just being a little bit coy. But now he's start, you know, two steals is not a ton, but at least it's a little bit more. The thing you want to see is, you know, his batted ball data was showing it wasn't, you know, a low batting average on balls in play or something like that. Like, this is a slump. His batted
wasn't
ball
hard
data.
Hit at all.
He wasn't hitting the ball.
Everything. You right. yeah. terrible. Pulling, you know, everything down the third base.
A lot of soft stuff. So, you know, you want to see him start squaring up the ball. And then if, you know, again, everything flows from getting on base. As Joe Sheehan would say, $1 Joe Sheehan, OBP is life. Right. You can't score a run if you're not on base. You can't attempt the stolen base if right. you're not on base. You know, you can drive in a run, but that hurts your OBP, right? It's a force out or a ground out or a sack fly. Everything comes from OBP. So as McCutcheon starts to get on more, all of those other numbers will start to blossom out of that.
You said V-Mart toast?
Yeah, I mean, again, talking about it. Now, this is a guy that we know has a knee problem,
yep. right.
and his game is suffering badly for it. And the other thing is, it's not a skill problem. His strike zone command is elite, more walks than strikeouts again, but he's just not able to hit the ball with any authority.
Yeah. Well, and that, to me, you know, and the older you get, obviously, as we see, you know, him getting into the late 30s, you know, it does become an issue that he's not responding unless they give him some time off, and they don't seem to have any desire to do that. And in fact, yeah, I mean, we saw Miggy limp through almost a whole season last year yeah. on a bad ankle. And so I think that's what V-Mart may end up doing. And I think the power is going to suffer for him this year, there's
yeah.
no doubt.
And, you know, if it were Miggy, we'd say, well, all right, they can hide him at DH. Like,
right.
you're already putting – you're already hiding V-Mart
you're
at DH.
DH-ing,
like,
right.
there's nowhere else
He's
to
He's hiding
go.
In plain sight.
Yeah, well played. Yeah, so I would be – you know, again, if I were talking about selling low, you know, we were talking last week about buying high, you mm-hmm. know, buying low and selling high. If I were going to be looking to cut my losses, I probably would be looking to sell out of V-Mart right now. I mean, yeah, he's going to get better. He's not going to hit 189 or whatever no. all season, but he's not going to sniff.
He's got him for power and runs batted in. I don't think
he's had lower half problems before and had poor seasons.
Right.
Let's do, you take the Shields, and then I'm going to give you Jackie Bradley Jr. platoon with Victorino.
Okay.
What's the latest on that?
Well, Leonis Martin is still having that wrist problem. DeShields is playing a lot. You know, as a Rule 5 pick, you kind of figured he would be a defensive replacement, pinch runner type. His minor league numbers didn't suggest that this guy could hit at the major league level, but here's one thing we knew. When he gets on, he's going to steal. He's like a little cheapo version of Billy Hamilton. Somehow this month in semi-regular playing time, he's been getting on, not only getting hits, but controlling the strike zone. I think 7 walks and 9 strikeouts. He's got 9 steals already.
You sure it's like, not his dad and the, you know, dressing up like in Ladybug?
Listen, Bob Jr., you know, Grissom and DeShields were gripping Bob. Yeah. So this is Bob Jr. Bob had 101 steals a couple of years ago in A-ball. This is a legit base stealer. So in shallow mixed leagues, I'm still reticent because I don't know if the guy's going to hit. But in 15-teamers or AL-onlys, look, you get a steal a week. It doesn't matter how you're getting it, right? Like, he's a Jerod Dyson type for me.
Yeah, right. And then with Jackie Bradley Jr. and Victorino, what does this say to you? And then, you know, throw Rusney in there. What are you seeing with this Red Sox situation down the line?
So it's a good one. I mean, obviously, Victorino coming off the DL, they're committed to him, the money-wise, and they, you know, he went through all his work in the wintertime to get himself in great shape. He's going to be the first choice. I don't think he's going to be the last. I think he's going to be the end choice. Now, I think Rusney, you know, he had some injuries. Mm-hmm. The guy's hurt a lot down there. I think he just hurt his wrist again. I don't know if he's in the lineup tonight, but that's something to keep an eye on down there. He's going to be their guy there. But Jackie Bradley, the one thing I don't know about him, his numbers in AAA, if you look at him, are up, and he had a good start to the season down there. And I was told from a scout recently that he made some adjustments to his swing that looked good, but I don't know if it's going to translate into the major league level. We don't know that, you know. So he's a guy that you just kind of keep an eye on. I think he's always been a tweener anyway. He'll steal you some bases. He doesn't have a lot of power, but he's not a blazing speed guy. He's not a big-time power guy. He's like an in-betweener. And so I don't, you know, I think short-term, you know, you watch him. If he gets hot, you ride him out, you know, in those deep leagues. But for me, I don't think he's a long-term answer. I think Castillo is, but I don't know right now with his health issues, they don't have any desire to bring him up. So they kind of sort through that, and I think it might be, you know, like what you're seeing. Victorino first, some point he'll flame out. If Jackie's swinging the bat, they'll give him more time. If neither of them are doing the job, then they'll bring up Castillo.
Yeah, we talk about this a lot in fantasy that, you know, defense doesn't count. Bradley, it counts. He's supposed to be an elite defensive center fielder. I haven't seen him, so I have no idea. But that's what's keeping him on the field. And, in fact, there was a lot of talk of will they have Betts shuttle back and forth between center and right to put their best guy in center field. But Farrell just said, I just want to stick Betts in one position and leave him alone. And, look, that's understandable because he's arguably their best player right now.
Right, right.
You know?
And he's a good fielder, obviously. I mean,
well, he's, you know, he's...
He can make the flashy
as play. Athletic. He can cover up his mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, he's been, you know, he's given away a couple of plays. Like, if you watch, you know, having watched him a lot, I have him on a bunch of teams, so I try and watch my guys play. You know, he makes some mistakes, but then again, I'm not a great center fielder either, and it's his first year. I mean, for a first-year center fielder, he's doing an exceptional job. By reputation, he's not as good as Bradley, but for all the other things he brings to the table, he's worth it.
All right, real quick, injury updates on Tanaka, Pence, and Puig, and then we'll go into lightning round.
I'll do these lightning round. Tanaka threw a bullpen session on Tuesday, said it went great. He's supposed to throw another one tomorrow, Friday. If that goes well, he's probably going to go out on a rehab, target him by the end of the month, if not sooner. It might be one of those things where if they can get him stretched out quickly, they bring him right back with the thinking that they don't want to waste any bullets in a rehab, you know. Pence has been working out. He's day-to-day. He could be activated any day now, so make room for that. Puig re-aggravated that hamstring on rehab a day before he was supposed to come back. Yep. Break my heart. But the MRI came back clean. No further injury, just re-aggravation. But you got to push him back at least 2 weeks now.
Yeah,
maybe three.
I don't know how baseball gets played without him.
And look, Jim and I were talking before we started. The Dodgers' offense, not only the number one offense in baseball, like number one, 50 feet of crap, and then everybody else, they're doing it without Puig. They get nothing from Jimmy Rollins, nothing from Crawford, never mind all the guys they traded away at the end of last year.
I mean, and Kemp.
When they get a top three of Peterson and Puig and Adrian Gonzalez, I don't care if Howie Kendrick hits six. He could be the new Tommy Herr.
Yeah.
You have 6 homers, 110 RBIs batting behind those guys.
Right. You know, Ethier's holding up. He's doing himself a lot of favors.
Alex Guerrero's been killing
Alex
the ball.
Guerrero, right.
Justin Turner has really evolved as a hitter. Yeah.
All right, let's go to the tweets that people sent in to @Fantasy411, and the Goose went around and collected some. This is @TravDanner. Duke, you take this one. I trade Garrett Richards and Evan Gattis for Carlos Santana, 12-team mix.
Richards and Gaddis. Richards,
so you, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously you're upgrading on Gaddis and you're paying Richards the price.
I'll tell you why I don't do this one, Jim. I can see Jim's conflicted. Yeah. Gaddis is catcher eligible, even though he's not playing catcher, which is a nice thing. Yeah. Santana's no longer catcher eligible. Garrett Richards, to me, in a 12-teamer, is like a number two starter. Yeah, I like dealing away starters, but that's not a big enough upgrade for me to give up Richards.
Yeah. I mean, I like Santana. I like the fact that he's no longer trying to play third base. We saw him once he was playing first base. The guy took off. I love him there, but, I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
I would do this in an OBP league, but not in a batting average league.
Got it. Fair enough. You know me. I love Garrett Richards. He's one of my favorites, and he had quite the nice start. A couple too many walks, but that's okay. Quite the nice start against the Astros over the weekend. This is from at ZPCT13 or Zipict13.
Zipted. Mixelplex.
Whoa. You just sent me to another dimension. And I have to say it backwards, right? Duke's like, what are you guys talking about? Are Ian Kennedy's early struggles something to worry about? Should I consider trading or dropping him?
I would be concerned about Ian Kennedy. His stuff, for me isn't as good. And I like him under Buddy, in San Diego. I love, they know him well, and I liked the fact that he came back and pitched like he did last year. But I worry about guys like him more, back-end type starters. For me, if they struggle, I don't have a lot of patience for them. I just, unless, depending on what else you have, I usually try to move them or drop them.
I mean, terrible, terrible bad luck on batting average on balls in play, terrible bad luck on strand rate, and a home run to fly ball rate more than double his previous career high. So I think he will get better. But as Jim said, he'll get better but become what? Right. He'll get better and become a number four starter. So if you're valuing him as a number four starter, yeah, I think he'll be that. But if you're waiting for an ace to emerge, it's not happening because it was never there in the first place. Yep.
This is from Matt White, 85. Is D. Gordon too much to give up for Devin Travis and Gio Gonzalez? I don't need steals. I do need pitching.
That's interesting. I mean, I love D. Gordon, but he's not going to keep this pace up. Devin Travis, I don't know what's going to happen with him. He's a heck of a player. Yeah. I think there's still some life left in the bat. And Gio, Gio's been
he's like two good, one bad, something like that.
I mean, I like Gio, in that spot. I like the fact that you're going to get some wins. I would consider that if you don't need the stolen bases, I'd consider that, for a trade. Personally.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. What do you think?
You can give steals. You need starting pitching. I like the idea, but I don't like the execution. Like I said before, if I'm going to deal for starting pitching, I want to deal for at least a number two guy. And to me, because of all the walks and sometimes the short outings, Gio's more like a three.
Yep.
I like what you're thinking here, but I would aim higher. A lot of the value you have coming back is what Travis might be, but you said you need a pitcher, so go for a better pitcher.
Yep, I agree. At B. Felkowski, trade Johnny Peralta plus one of these to get Tulo. So who? It's not that which pitcher would get you Tulo, it's which pitcher would you include. Because it's Garrett Cole, Zach Greinke, and Keuchel. So you're making a major upgrade. Well, in theory, major upgrade from Peralta to Tulo, but you have to pay the price of one of these starters.
I'd give Keuchel, but I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't give any of those other guys with Peralta to get Tulo because, A, I'm not sure how many games Tulo is going to play this year. You're never sure of that. B, I'm not sure where he's going to play him.
Right.
And C, his plate discipline this year has been horrendous.
We haven't seen the power out of him yet either.
Right, a lot of doubles.
Which makes me worry about the surgery from last year. That's going to come maybe at some point, but it may not be till late. Like you said, the injury stuff.
A lot of doubles, but playing in Coors and only having, two homers so far?
Right.
Tons and tons of red flags here. I wouldn't give up a potential ace for Tulo at this point.
I would do Keuchel, but I wouldn't do the other two.
I agree.
All right, at Kevin Van DeWalker. I like this one. Who's the better stash in an AL only? Big Irv or Andrew Heaney?
Big Irv or Andrew Heaney?
Now, we know when Irv's coming back, right?
We do.
Halfway through the season.
Yeah.
Heaney has been fairly quiet.
Yeah. I might go with the Big Irv, man. Pitching in that park. It's so hard to know what you're going to get when they come back, but pitchers, I think, have a better chance of coming back from a lengthy time off than. Mm-hmm. Than hitters do, so I might go with a Big Irv stash on that one.
Yeah, I agree. There was a lot of buzz around Heaney in spring training that this is a great guy to stash, and I saw him pitch twice, actually, and both times he got hammered, and I just didn't – again, I'm not a scout. I'm not a former GM like Jim.
But I think he's a back-end starter.
I didn't see anything that made me think, oh, yeah, I need to stash this guy.
Right.
He got hit hard. He didn't look impressive, and if I've got a choice of, a middling starter who at least I know what I'm getting, I'd take Santana.
Right, I agree. And I like Heaney, but I agree. Yeah. At Pete Baseball, trade Cespedes and Pineda for Puig and Pfister. Challenge trade, outfielder and starter for outfielder and starter. So which side do you want, Cespedes and Pineda or Puig and Pfister?
Well, with Puig's injury, and I worry about hamstrings, I'll take Cespedes and Pineda for sure.
I agree. You know, I think the difference between Pineda and Pfister is considerable. Obviously, there's injury risk there, but you'd be getting back a huge injury risk. You know, part of Puig's value is stolen bases. Are they going to let him run?
No. The guy was he won't want to run.
He's a 60% base stealer to begin with. They may just say, you know what, no more steals for you. You're done.
No, they don't want to re-injure it.
Kind of like happened with Cespedes. Yeah. You know, he was supposed to be a five-category guy. He doesn't run anymore either. So I would take the Cespedes-Pineda side.
All right, good job, as always, by the great Jim Duquette and the so-so Corey Stats.
Serviceable.
That'll do it for this edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411. Don't forget to check out the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. And thanks, as always, to the folks on the other side of the glass. For Corey and Jim, I'm Mike Ciano. And this has been the MLB.com Fantasy 411 for May 14th, 2015, year of our Lord, 1AB.